CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Monday morning. It's already the 15th of November. You got it's like a month of work left for most people, because most people's businesses close down on around the 15th, right? So that's it. It's like we're in the home stretch now. By the way, we made a decision the other day. We'll be doing the show until the 24th. That's Christmas Eve. And we'll also be taking a break after that. So just to let you know, I know our audience like to be informed about everything. We don't spring surprises on them and all that stuff. So good morning, everybody. Leanne Moles here. Bulelo Tinta's here. I'm here. You're here. That's the full house. So, how was the weekend?
I had a good one again because I was still house sitting.
Yes.
So,
whose house are you sitting?
Yeah, my brother's house.
Oh, right.
He's been in the Maldives.
Oh.
And he missed his dog so much. I had to send about 3 videos a day of the dog.
Oh, wow.
He's like,
oh my God.
Please send another video. Please send another pic. anyway, I managed to keep everything afloat,
mm-hmm.
Besides one incident where I locked myself out the house and needed a locksmith to come and open up the house. But otherwise, everything else was standing.
Yeah.
I also found out that I left, there are 2 gates on the property, and I left one halfway open for I don't know how many days.
Basically, you're actually the worst house sitter in the universe. Like, you're actually not really good at this.
So it does get worse. on the day that he's arriving home, which is yesterday, I realized that his dog is not well, but like seriously not well. She's about at 10% energy of what she's usually at.
Oh, no. What have you done?
So I managed to get her to the vet, and there is a gastro going around. He came home to a very subdued dog. And I felt really bad because he'd been dying to see her. Yeah.
So
I feel like a bit of a bad mom.
Yeah.
Or a bit of a bad aunt.
Bit of a bad house sitter too, by the sound of things.
Yeah. Look, it's my first time in about 20 years that I've done this. It can be quite challenging. But mostly it was great because I had air conditioning, a pool, a fridge full of food.
Nice.
So, yeah, all of that was very good.
You should have just moved in. By the time he got there, you're, like, entrenched. You know, you've taken over one of the rooms. You've, like, painted shit on the wall. You should have just made it yours.
If you knew how fussy he was, that's why that makes it even funnier. Talking about moving in, especially this week, it might have to be a possibility. You know, we've got these water shortages coming up.
Oh, God.
And I'm one of the affected suburbs.
Oh, no.
And again, because I live on a hill, I'm always the last to receive the water once it's filled up from a reservoir.
What is this, like the 1300s?
I know, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, the people at the bottom of the hill, they can have some water, but the people at the top, I'm terribly sorry, but by then we'll have run out. So. What is this?
You know. All the bottom feeders use up the water before it can reach the top of the hill.
So here's the trade-off that we make in modern society. We will give political leaders our taxes. We will give them, you know, 40% or so of everything we earn, which means the first 4 months of the year, let's say the first 5.5 months of the year in some cases, you work for the government, no matter who you are, right? In return... And we'll go to the polls and all of that shit. We'll abide by the laws. You know, the general stuff that keeps a society together. But in return, you take care of stuff like water, electricity, basic healthcare, basic education, stuff like that.
Security, jobs.
Yeah, but that's the rule of law, right? That should be right at the top of the list. But I don't know that trade-off is working so well for us anymore. And I don't want to start the Monday thinking about this, but it is still very much on my mind. You know, the elections are only a few days behind us. And I wonder if all these assholes that we voted for are going to get their act together. and just be able to put together some sort of service delivery plan, especially in major cities. I mean, you know, there's no hope, I'm afraid, for those people in outlying areas and little towns. But for the big cities, hopefully there's still enough people who know what they're doing and still enough politicians who have to fight for their position. Anyway, let's see how it goes. I had a good weekend, except I've had an ass spasm or something. My right ass cheek has been like really sore, like there's a muscle I pulled or something. I don't know how you pull an ass muscle in the first place, but it's been...
sodomy? Sodomy's gone away?
No, it wasn't sodomy. I would know, but I'd know. That would have been something I might have felt and remembered.
Just running through the list.
Well, it's been like a week and a half of this, and it's weird because it sends this shooting pain down my right leg. Now, I know I'm old, so I expect to have some... I expect to have some of this.
It could be a sciatic nerve thing.
It could be, but
it's like the tendon that runs down the right of your leg.
I don't know. The point is, I've been doing exercise every day anyway, so it's not as if I suddenly pulled something that I didn't lead up to this with some. I've been doing stretches and, you know, I'm making sure that I do a little bit of exercise every day and sometimes a little bit more than a little bit, but I'm not straining anything, mostly keeping it quite sort of safe. Anyway, I'm going to have to go for some sort of treatment today because this this right ass cheek of mine is like it's tight, you know, it's like it's pulled tight and it's like now my whole leg feels heavy. So I've got to go and get that dealt with. And, you know, I might come back with a peg leg. Wouldn't that be fun?
You never know.
And you chop it off.
Could be elephantitis.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, great. Yeah. Keep talking. This is fantastic. Making my Monday so great.
Well, stay open to it. I'm totally with
you. Gangrene? Are there any smells yet?
No smells of gangrene. No, there's no rot or anything. It's definitely a muscular thing, thank God. But I am also this week going for my second... what do they call it? Vaccine shot. The Pfizer one. So I'll have to see how that goes. I mean, I'm not worried because the first one, there was no reaction at all. So why would there be on the second one? Some people say, but you get the worst reaction on the first one. And then some people say, no, it's the second one. I'm like, well, if you get one, the other one's going to be shit too. If you don't get either, then that's because you kind of, maybe your system is just not as easily affected by it. So I'll let you know how that goes too. So there's my health concerns out of the way. Now we really are old people. Okay. So that's isn't that great? We've unloaded all that shit. How was your weekend, Mulelo?
I mean, I was ailing as well, but I didn't have any sort of tight glute issues. I was ailing for the first time in a long time, which wasn't. It doesn't feel good. You know, so, I like to be kind of moving and grooving. Been missing gym. Wasn't good. Wasn't a good weekend.
Bulelo felt like he was dying over the weekend. He said he had a sore stomach and, you know, like pain. And he was just basically wretched. You were wretched. That was what you were this weekend. You were wretched. So
all alone. The man alone with his sore tummy.
So did you just lie there in your house farting and like...
dribbling.
No, like otherwise you start to feel sorry for yourself. So I still went to the shops, then I went for a COVID test on Saturday in case. Mm-hmm. Not because I was worried about, I don't want to be the dickhead who's fist bumping people at work. Hey, how's it going? I don't want to be some pure Barrett, you know, and become the person that brings COVID to work again. Well, that's what happened. It was either some pure Barrett who gave us all COVID the first time. Yeah. And then, I just went to the shops feeling dreadful. Walking around thinking, oh my gosh, if I could just bulldoze everyone in this line so I could take my grapes home and curl up on the couch and die alone, this would be amazing. I just wanted to bulldoze everybody in the line.
Right.
Sounds a little bit man flu-ish.
Yeah.
Like a little more feeling sorry for yourself than actual ailment.
Did you ever get did you get sympathy from your mother when you were a kid if you got sick?
Oh, no.
No, I mean,
No,
man flu was never a thing for me because my mother would actively hate us as her children. She would become hateful of us when we got sick. It was like we'd done something to upset her. We would say, oh, mommy, I'm feeling so well. Oh, for fuck's sake. Straight away. It was like none, zero sympathy. So now I don't get man flu. I don't sit and feel sorry for myself. What happens to me is if I get sick, I immediately go, oh, I mustn't let anyone know. Because they're gonna hate me. This is how I was raised to think about.
It's an inconvenience, you see.
Yeah.
And especially when you've got three children, like your mom has, then you know, I mean, one of them sick at one point all the time.
There was never a point where I thought that my mother was caring and worried when I was sick. It was always like, oh, I've ruined her day. It was like, we should ask the Dr. Hanan about this, because I'm telling you, there's been an effect. So what I would do, I remember I broke my arm in primary school. We were like playing around.
Doing what?
We were playing around during break and pushing each other down the embankments and shit. You know how kids are. I mean, little boys, I was what, 10, 11 or whatever. And I fell really badly. And I don't know if I broke my arm. I must have fractured an arm bone or something. So get into the car on the way home, and I'm like, Mom, my arm's a bit sore. She's like, oh, what have you done, you idiot? I'm like, no, we fell down the bank, and she's like, you just don't want to go to tennis tomorrow, hey? So I'm like, no, I like tennis. So she's like, okay, I'm going to take you to the hospital, but if you fucking me around. So anyway, we go to the hospital. And it's like, Mrs. Cliff, I'm sorry, your son has a fracture. And she's like, oh. So she took me seriously as soon as the doctor said that. Up to then, I was talking shit in her mind. So I was in a cast for like a couple of weeks. And she still didn't care after that. After that, there still wasn't like, don't give any quarter to this weakness, this pathetic mewling that my child does every now and then. And all three of us learned, don't bother your mother with your sickness. Just be sick, get over it, and then move on.
I always knew to just have a panado, because that's what my mom would say.
Yeah.
Anything that was wrong. Have you had a panado?
Yeah.
And the other thing was she never took my lack of eyesight seriously.
Yeah.
The fact that I couldn't see far. And, you know, some of the teachers had started saying to her, look, we have to keep putting Leanne at the front of the class because she can't see the board. And people would walk past me in the shop and they would wave and I wouldn't wave back because I couldn't see them. I earned this reputation. For being a rude bitch.
Wow.
People were like, Leanne never says hello to you when she sees you outside of school. And eventually went to the optometrist. And the optometrist put up onto the screen, because my mom's eyesight's perfect.
Yeah.
He put up onto the screen what a normal block of letters would look like to me without glasses. And when my mom saw it, she was so shocked, because she obviously couldn't see any letters. Yeah. It was just a blur.
So she finally felt sorry for you.
Yeah, finally got the glasses. But then she kind of developed this oversympathy later on in life. So if I said to her, Mom, I'm feeling so nauseous, I don't know what to do. She would then get nauseous and say, now, do you see what you've done? I feel nauseous too.
There's more guilt. No.
But on the other side of your fantastic sounding mom is I would far rather have that.
Mm.
I cannot stand people who need you to know how sick they are.
Oh, God.
And they're like, when they talk to you, they even lower their voice.
Yeah, and hello, hi, I'm having a bit of a rough day.
God.
Oh, it's pathetic. I'm sorry. As a result, I have no and I'll tell you what, I get better quicker. We also didn't medicate heavily as children. Like, my mother wouldn't give us – she'd say, oh, you'll be fine. You know, sweat it out or go to sleep. Or sleep, a bit of sun – and drink lots of water were usually the recommended treatment for everything. No matter what, from a broken arm to like a headache. Just do
Mom,
those
I've got
things.
A headache. Well, you haven't been drinking enough water. But Tracy Bard has a good suggestion.
Yes.
And this is something else that my mom used to test on us as well.
Mm-hmm. She says, how I test. Yeah.
Yeah.
You go for
it. Whether my kids are really sick is I offer them a suppository. If they willingly take it, I know something is brewing. Otherwise, a sympathy plaster or a panado will do the trick.
Right. There we go, Tracy. That's exactly right. Anyway, I don't think too much sympathy is good for kids. You know, I was talking to my dad the other day, and I said to him, because my little nephews were visiting with them for the weekend. My brother was away with his wife, and they had a little weekend away to celebrate their, I don't know how many years it is, anniversary. It could even be a big one. Anyway, they were away, and the kids were staying with my parents. And my little nephew says to my dad, "Is it true that you once left my dad at school and only fetched him when it was dark?" Because my dad, he did once forget to fetch us from school. Now, I'd forgotten about this, but obviously it traumatized my brother to some degree. And he was, his son wants to know if this is true. And my dad was like, "Yeah, but it was only once. I mean, it wasn't a big deal, you know." So then he tells me, well, when he was a child, he once sat under the one little light at the Wanderers waiting for his mother to come and fetch him. It was just this one light. He was all on his own in this parking lot, and he was sitting under this light wondering if his mom would ever come, and then the lights eventually came down the road, and she fetched him. He reckons it must have been about 7:30 in the evening, and all the other kids had gone and everything else. And I suddenly thought, you know, actually, I'm sure that happened more than once for us, and it was fine. I didn't think I was going to be abandoned and no one was going to fetch me. I didn't think that something terrible had happened. I just assumed there was stuff going on, and there usually was. But these days, if you didn't fetch your kid, I mean, if a parent doesn't pick up their kid between like this golden window period, maybe there's a half an hour, you know, where you can play on either side. You'd be branded a terrible parent. The headmaster or headmistress would call you in. They'd call in, child services or whatever it is. They'd have a psychologist sent to your house. Can you imagine all the stuff that they would do these days if you just forgot to pick up your kid, or not just forgot? Let's say there was something happening, and you know, some emergency took place. They'd be held to pay for that poor parent.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there were probably around 5 to 10 times my mum forgot me or was just really late.
No.
And I remember sitting on my suitcase under the shade of a thorn bush, which isn't very shady, in the scorching heat. No. You know when your black shoes start singeing through your socks?
Yeah, they almost start melting.
Yeah, no. Just sitting there, and no sunblock. I mean, that wasn't a thing. You only wore two stripes of zinc if you went to the beach.
We didn't put sunblock on when we went to the beach as kids. We were, please, sun is good for you. Get some sun. You look pale. You're pale. Go and get some sun.
No water, no supplies, no phone. Just sitting under a thorn tree in the blistering African sun, waiting for my mom to come. And then if you dared complain, I mean,
oh my God,
you know, you just didn't do that.
Well, my mother would stop the car and say, "Right, get out, walk." Even though she never made us walk, it was a threat enough. You know, we were like, "Oh shit, she's got that tone in her voice. It's going to be that kind of day. Just shut up in the back of the car." Anyway.
And let's also not forget that my mom left me at the frozen peas in the Pick and Pay.
You've never let her forget. Cram. You've never let her forget that.
No, exactly.
Yeah. I once had an incident as this beautiful country of South Africa was transitioning. Like, my parents, like my dad's tough guy, tough guy, no nonsense, but very rural, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I never really got the relationship between pets and white people. Like, that was never a thing where I was from. Yeah. And I remember once, I was at primary school here in Bryanston, and a little girl, like, didn't come to school for a while. So I was just like, okay, well, whatever. And then she came back, and she was just like, "Why weren't you at school?" And she's like, "My dog died." And I burst out laughing. Like, I'll never forget this. What are you talking about? I mean, I still kind of think the same to this day, but I know how people with kids are. But I remember, and then she just burst out crying. I was like, "What is going on here? What do you mean your dog died? Just get another dog," kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was the day I realized, white people and black people, we live very, very differently at that time.
Yeah.
There is an American black guy on Twitter, on TikTok, who he's got this saying, I'm just trying to get the letters right, which is why I'm slowing down. "White women aren't scared of shit." Yeah, I think it's Wasos.
Yeah.
"White women aren't scared of shit."
Yeah.
And he talks about how, you know, if there is a stray animal of any kind, I mean, it could be a baby bear, it could be a small tiger, it could be anything. Mm-hmm. A white woman will stop her car, yeah. will fret about it, mm-hmm. will put it onto her lap and drive to the nearest wildlife center and make sure that this animal is well looked after. Or take it in and like start buying it shit, he says, like buying it jerseys and knitting it caps and, you know, taking it to lessons and all of this sort of thing. And it's grown and grown, this trend. And now he's got, somebody's made these T-shirts, WWASOS. And, he people walking around. But he says, you have to, as a black American man, you have to have at least three white women's numbers on speed dial. Because if ever you're approached by a bear or anything, you have to call them. They'll come and look after this animal and get it out of your way.
I don't know. Lordy. I was talking to somebody about pets the other day, and I think, you know, like having a pet is, it's a sign of some sort of, you know, next level movement. Like you really have to be able to take care of plants first. If you can keep plants alive, then you can have a pet. And if your pet is happy and balanced and not a problem, because you get neurotic, stupid, crazy pets because they're owners, then you can go on to having children. But that should be the plan. It shouldn't start with children and then you kill plants and animals. Because a lot of people, you know, I don't know who should decide this. It's obviously not the government. But a lot of people really shouldn't have kids. And you can tell almost immediately when you see them with children, especially if it's their children and their children are horrible little brats that no one wants anything to do with. You're like, uh-oh, that person should have, been sterilized. That's just something that you know straight away. And
yeah.
Pets are an intermediary step. So I think it's a good indication that someone can care about something else and can prioritize something else. I mean,
to think of, yeah. to think that when you adopt an animal, if you adopt a dog or a cat, you have home inspections, oh. you have all of these forms to fill out. I could fall pregnant today if I wanted to. Well, maybe not if I wanted to. I'd have to try really hard. But, you know, anyone can just have a baby without anyone inspecting their house.
Oh, well. No, but you should be. You should really, like, I don't know who, again, this should be, but there should be some sort of central authority that's independent of politics that can do, like, a bit of a background check on you. They, like, check that you've got enough money in the bank, for starters. You know, like, how many kids have you already got? Have you got some money in the bank? Do you actually live in a dwelling where you have, like, you know, it's sanitary, for starters. Like, it's clean. You keep your area clean. You don't live in your own filth. And then, what's the relationship between you and the person you're making this child with? Because it's always two people who make a kid. It's never just one. And if there isn't a relationship at all, that should be like 5 points down out of 10. And then you lose another point if you are either one of those drug addict rich people, or if you're a really, really desperately poor person who can't put food on the table, you lose a few points. And then they just say to you, I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Simpson, but your application has been denied this time. You know, you can't have a kid now. You'll have to come back in a year's time, and let's see if we can change that.
So much. That's so what it is.
Although I totally agree, because we've moved into an era where now people expect to be thanked for things that people did in worse conditions.
I know.
Without expecting anything. Like,
I know.
Like being a mom's a full-time job. Hey, Carol, maybe you shut the hell up. You know, like... 35 years ago, imagine what women were going through
yes.
while making food, while looking after their husband, and being a nurse, and.
Okay,
all you do is a mom.
So we commemorated Armistice Day across the world on the 11th of November, as we do every year, just to remember, you know, in the case of all the wars since, but mostly the First World War, which I think two of my great-grandfathers were involved in as well. There is no way that those guys would look at us and our problems today and go, ah, shame. They'd go, you are pathetic. What is wrong with you? We used to have to drink the corpse water inside of shelled-out ditches filled with mud and flies and filth. And if we were lucky, we would be able to sleep for an hour standing up in the trenches while the Germans are trying to take us out at goddamned eye level. Are you moaning about... What? The glass ceiling? The patriarchy? Oppression? Are you out of your mind? Like, our ancestors would laugh at us if they had to look at our problems now. They would think we were the most pathetic creatures that ever lived. And I always wonder if, like, you had to bring someone from 500 years back, if you had to bring someone who was around when, you know, being human was like, it was about surviving through the day. Forget about philosophy and, you know, finding your meaning and your purpose. You just had to survive through the day, then you were doing a really good job as a human. You plonk them in 2021 and say to them, you know, there's quite a lot of trouble in the world today. He'd go, what trouble? Or she'd go, what are you talking about? Are you insane? So that's what I would
have to do. Yeah, so true. It's all relative. It's good to know that we're at a point of comfort and evolution where we are able to sit back and philosophize and question our, you know, state of being and look at life, society, society's rules.
I can't believe it.
It's a good thing.
I didn't have internet today for a whole 20 minutes. You know?
But
we'll always moan no matter what.
What's that?
And everybody blames Gen Z for being soft. No. We allowed them, including my generation. We allowed them to get soft.
Yeah.
So people always blame the kids, right? Like, no, we're soft now.
It's not the kids' fault.
Like, we allowed the next generation to be soft-ass bitches.
That's right. And we've just got to admit that we are. Like, it's pathetic what people complain about these days. Seriously, if you find yourself moaning about political shit, you don't know what the world is. Tracy says, the biggest disaster faced by generations today is when the Wi-Fi is down or the metaverse has a wobble.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I did see something pretty funny yesterday, though. Bernie Sanders, as usual, was tweeting out a whole lot of bullshit. You know, Bernie Sanders is this foolish old man who he still thinks that, like, communist and socialist ideas have an application in the 21st century. He's just an old moron. And, you know, just like you get wise old people, you also get foolish old people. So this old lunatic says, we must demand that the extremely wealthy pay their fair share, period. By the way, in America, the extremely wealthy, or that is to say anyone who earns over, I think it's $500,000, those people are paying 40% of the total tax anyway. So tell me about fair share, Bernie. And this is a guy who's got like two holiday houses, by the way. So he seems to think that he is not in the rich category when he is. And this is a person who's also parasitized the system for all his life. He's never had a job outside of politics. You can't tell. Don't talk about taxing people if you've never had a job outside of politics, because politics is just taking other people's money. Anyway, he says this. So Elon Musk pipes up. He goes, I keep forgetting that you're still alive. Isn't that great? I love that. That's fantastic.
Oh, Lord.
Anyway, so Michael's kind of agreeing with us here. He says you need a license to drive a car and to shoot a gun, but creating a life is free, easy, not discouraged among the uneducated and unprepared. And Tracy says in sad news, Wilbur Smith passed away. Yeah, I saw that on social media yesterday. Wilbur Smith, the author of hundreds of books. I mean, he was probably the most successful writer of this continent in the last 100 years. I mean, my dad is a massive fan of his. He's got like hundreds of his books on the shelf at home. And I've never read a single bit of Wilbur Smith, so I can't say I'm at all educated on this subject. But it seems like we've lost someone really, really special here. And you know, I'm obviously a little bit sad that there's another great writer who's passed on. Obviously, books are also becoming a thing that people are paying less and less attention to as we find ourselves attached to screens more and more. But nonetheless, sad.
Also, when any moron can write a book these days as well and call themselves an author. My claim to fame is that I was invited by Wilbur Smith and his wife for dinner at their house in Cape Town.
Oh, really? Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I think the most amazing thing is that it was such a love story between the two of them. I mean, he always spoke openly about his bad marriages that he'd had in the past. And then he met this woman at a bookshop, somewhere in Cape Town. No, in London. In London they met, yes. She's from Tajikistan, I think.
Oh, wow.
And the two of them fell head over heels in love. And she was an amazing, she is an amazing woman.
Really?
Very vivacious and loud and loves having people over and entertaining. I mean, when I went there, it was, I think it was a table of about 10 of us. And she'd had a chef come over to prepare the meals. And this was probably about 8 years ago. And Wilbur Smith wasn't, he wasn't quite there, you know, he wasn't fully present.
Right.
But he absolutely loved beautiful women.
Oh, yeah.
Me being the youngest one there, came and sat next to him and spoke to him, and his wife was extremely jealous.
Oh, really?
So the more he spoke to me, the more I was trying to edge away and go back to my seat. I think it's been a long time of him battling age. Mm. He was 88 when he died on Saturday. But
The Times summarizes him like this. It said, Wilbur Smith stood alongside Alistair MacLean and Hammond Innes at the head of a post-war generation of action blockbuster writers for whom everything was writ large and epic. But while his contemporaries, along with those who followed like Frederick Forsyth and Ken Follett, tended to deal in war stories and espionage, Smith dug his own furrow, inspired by his African childhood. Nice.
Mm.
Okay, so that's
he was originally from Bulawayo, I think, in
Zambia.
Bulawayo is in Zimbabwe, so it must have been Zambia. Okay, very nice.
Yeah. But yeah.
A great African.
Okay.
A great African, all-timer.
My husband's boss always tells his wife, quiet Wilbur Smith if she talks too much. He's terrible. Quiet Wow.
Quiet Wilbur Smith.
Wow.
Then he hated the books.
I don't know, clearly.
Always just full of words. I mean, he's an author.
Maybe that's it. Many great movies came from his books, says Yvonne. I didn't know that either. Michael says he's a very readable writer. Everybody must write a memoir. We need more nonfiction. Well, the problem is so many people's memoirs are fiction. That's the problem. Like they make it up. You know, they've done research into, and we'll get to headlines in a second, but they've done a number of studies around how bad human memory actually is. And what you think is true when you look back on your life is nothing like what actually happened. We have terrible recollection. If you, for example, take someone's affidavit straight after an accident and they describe the accident, and you take down a detailed affidavit from them of precisely where the car was, what color the other car was, where it happened, whether there were people on the side of the road, what the weather was like, you get them to write that down. A year later, they've completely changed the story in their heads. And you show them the affidavit, they go, what? No, I'm sure that person wasn't there, and that car was green, and it was raining. No.
Yeah.
It was sunny, the car was red, and there was no one else on that side of the road. The people were on that side of the road. That's what you wrote down. No. I remember it very differently. So never, ever trust your own memory. And don't trust other people's. It's very hard. That's why in court, you know, your hearsay problem comes up and people's inability to remember very careful and well-documented facts. That's why these days, you know, you've got video and photos and all of that stuff to prove it. It must have been much harder in the old days.
Definitely. And we also tend to remember one or two things, and then we play on that and play on that and play on that. And then we develop a new reality around those three memories that we have.
Yes. Yeah, precisely. Yeah.
It's why I'll pay extra to go to a good restaurant. So I'll always save up, because waiters seem to think it's impressive to take my order and not write it down.
Oh, you hate that.
I'm the guy. I force you. No. Come back here. Let's write it down together because – I'm not impressed by that.
No.
You're obviously not saving enough to go to fine dining restaurants where you don't write stuff down because you've only got a few things on the menu.
He doesn't believe that the waiter remembers. Anyway.
No, they don't.
Look, here are some headlines from this morning to just get you up to date, because over the weekend you might not have watched or paid any attention to the news. Britney Spears has been released from a 13-year conservatorship.
Yay.
I think I'm going to cry, she told her. That's totally stable. I think I'm going to cry, she told her.
I'm
going to cry. She told her 35 million Instagram followers. A judge in Los Angeles on Friday ended the conservatorship set up by the 39-year-old singer's father in 2008 with immediate effect. Fans had gathered outside the court to support Spears, who had described her guardianship as abusive. Her life was in shambles, and she was in physical, emotional, mental, and physical and financial distress. Lawyers representing Jamie Spears said in earlier court filings, the conservatorship had power over her finances and career decisions, plus major personal matters such as her visits with her teenage sons and whether she can get remarried. I just want to say, because I know that there are a lot of people who are like in the Free Britney train, just do me a favor.
Not me.
No, go and follow this crazy bitch for like 10 minutes on Instagram or wherever on social media that she happens to be. Just follow her.
There are
her.
Much crazier people who are out on the loose. Much crazier.
Just follow her.
She hasn't been able to buy so much as a coffee without recording it.
It's just as well. She'd probably spill it on herself and then blame, like, the universe.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
She's
I can't believe she's only 39.
39.
She's got so long to still be nuts with all the money in the world.
Exactly.
You see, the thing about Britney that I think people never think about is she's one of the richest human beings to ever live and is also nuts. So a lot of people go, oh, there's other people as crazy. Yeah, there's the other thing of when you have $300 million, crazy tends to go to, like, oh, my God, the next 12 months, wow. Wow. It is going to be incredible.
Well,
if he does. I can't wait.
I'm going to go straight to wherever she is, and I'm just going to propose marriage. And she'll say yes, and then I can have half
She's already.
So easy.
She's already getting married to someone else.
That's fine. Well, I'll be able to. I'll be able to dissuade her like that. She'd sit down with me for 5 minutes, and she'll think that the sky is orange and that the land is sinking.
No,
under her. Oh, she's.
You guys have nothing on this guy.
She is.
He understands her like no other.
Understands
her. She's Britney Spears.
She's batshit
crazy. She should
crazy.
Be with Brad Pitt already. That tells you how nuts she is. You're one of the greatest pop stars ever. What are you doing with a number one Kevin Federline, a backup dancer? Now you are the.
Come on.
I love it, Britney. Take it all
anyway,
the way.
I mean, listen, her dad is going to say, in about 3 years' time, her dad will be saying to everyone, especially all these Free Britney people, I told you so. Watch.
Me too. I love saying those words. Hmm. I love saying I told you so. Hmm. I'm also going to be saying I told you so.
Just watch. Watch what happens. Just follow her. Don't take my word for it. Follow her for 5 minutes on Instagram. You'll see what I mean.
Yeah, but then you guys are going to judge everything she does. So if she goes out and makes a purchase of a Ferrari, you're going to, like, roll your eyes.
Yes.
You know how many people that you admire in Hollywood are making stupid decisions every single day?
Yes, but they weren't placed under conservatorship by their own father because they were worried about the terrible
And that conservatorship has made her even more dilly.
Oh, I don't know. Hey, I think you give someone who's as crazy as she is even more freedom. There's a whole lot more crazy that she's still got stored up waiting for us to see. Just wait. Just go. Don't take my word for it. Follow her. Take Britney's own word for it. Watch how crazy she goes. Let's see how much fun we're going to have. So the Queen didn't attend the Remembrance Day service because she has a sprained back. So maybe what I've got is the same as what the Queen has. Maybe her ass cheek is sore.
Maybe the inherited trauma of war, just like, oh, there goes my back, there goes my glutes, says Gareth Cliff.
Yeah,
there we are, Elizabeth, you and I.
Yeah, Elizabeth.
And Kate Middleton took her place.
Yes, and that Kate Middleton is fantastic. She's so good at what she's doing there. I mean, I know that it's a ridiculous role, right? It really is. Being in the royal family is kind of ridiculous. But this Kate Middleton, she knows what to do, hey? She steps up. Dresses appropriately.
Well, she's right on facial, the balcony,
right
more black.
Facial, I know. Right facial expressions, right presence. She's got that dignified thing going on. She's lovely. Compare her to, you know, Prince Harry and Meghan. Disaster zone. Anyway, there's a there's a new law to end job hopping by corrupt municipal officials. This is good news. So a new law would be on its way soon to President Cyril Ramaphosa's desk. This law will clamp down on municipal officials involved in corruption, easily being able to move over and join other municipalities without being held accountable. You don't know this because you wouldn't know who's on your municipal council, right? I mean, I don't. But apparently they're really bad people. They just hop from municipality to municipality because they're loyal cadres. They get protected. And they never actually do what they're there to do. They're a disaster. And we have to end up footing the bill for these people, and they end up being protected. It's almost like in the Catholic Church, what they do with a pedophile priest, you know? They just move them to a new parish. Because if you're a loyal priest, then the other priests gather around you and they protect you. This is what happens in the ANC, is that if you're a loyal cadre, the rest of the ANC gather around you and they say, oh, well, you know, Sfiso's not so bad. We'll just move him into Ekuruleni. And then in Ekuruleni, he steals like a couple of hundred million and he gets caught with his dick in someone. And, you know, he ends up poisoning the wells or whatever it is in Ekuruleni. So they just say, oh, well, we'll just move him to Imalahleni. Let's just send him there. And then he goes off to Imalahleni, screws that up as well. They just keep moving him. That's what they're doing. So apparently they're going to stop this now. So that's good news, if they actually do it.
Great news.
I mean, the fact that there had to be this active decision to stop this.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous, right? And then Leanne is one of the people who's going to be disrupted in this 54-hour water disruption, which is going to happen from Monday for parts of Gauteng. Listen to this. Rand Water's 54-hour shutdown is set to start on Monday, and it's led to the postponement of the city's first council meeting. Oh, that's great. So they can't meet. They can't meet because there's no water. That's exactly why you should
be. Yeah, and I can't flush my loo.
We should be locking you people into a room until you figured out what to do about this. And you should be the first people to not have water. Let's see how you survive 54 hours. Joburg City Council, newly elected councillors, put you in a room, lock the doors, no water, figure it out. If you haven't got an answer by the time we open the doors again, then we're not going to let you have water again. And you can just desiccate in front of us.
Well, the biggest thing is not being able to flush your loo. That's the worst, because you just sit in a room of unflushable stuff.
Stink. The shutdown will result in low pressure and possibly no water in many areas. And we're okay with this, are we? No water. We're okay with that? I'm sorry. This is when politicians talk about dignity and human rights, all of that stuff, let me be very clear about this. You cannot promise anyone dignity if they don't even have running water. And this is not something which is new, which was brought to you by the ANC. Running water has been a thing since ancient Rome. Okay, it's been a thing. The ancient Romans had running water. It is unacceptable that this bunch of morons that we have put in charge of this country have let things get so bad that now we're going back to pre-Roman era water delivery.
We're going to need, like, aqueducts.
We're going to need...
hey, doll, dude. I'll see you for a spicy pumpkin latte. Oh, no, the aqueduct's stuck on Grayson.
Aqueducts would be an advance on the ANC's way of thinking about that. They would expect us all to carry water and use the bucket system. Like, they think it's okay for people in rural areas to use. You know this.
Right.
Bastards.
Yes, I do.
Anyway, they say that this will affect licensing services at the Metro Police, testing stations, the payment of traffic fines. Oh, good. Then you can't have our traffic fine money. Good. That's fine.
No, they still want us to pay online.
Oh, right.
They're closing everything because people won't be able to flush toilets. That's what the whole thing
is.
That's
terrific. Isn't that nice? Anyway, one last thing. Wilbur Smith, he died at the age of 88. We've kind of discussed him already. And those are your headlines for this morning. Just a few things that you need to know about. We've got Collectomania today. I'm excited about that.
Nice.
Yes. Bulelo, what have you got today on the MKT show?
Today we've got Brad, a physiologist. We've got a guy who's running 100K, something called the Sky Run this weekend. Devin Miller, who's the head of the gym, if you live in the northern, in the burbs, Gold's Gym. So he's coming in. We'll talk to him about high performance and things like that. And then we've got Spike Ballantyne. We'll talk about an insane F1 yesterday in Brazil.
Happened? What happened in Brazil? I don't watch the Formula One.
Lewis Hamilton, absolute, geez, like a barnstorming race. So Hamilton, Verstappen, the tactics, Red Bull got it wrong with their stop. It was just a wild thing. And then Valentino Rossi's out of here, so we'll talk about Valentino Rossi's career as well, because I love him.
All right.
And he's typically, in an Italian way, doesn't pay tax, so he had to leave for a bit.
Well, taxes, aren't taxes still optional in places like Greece and Italy? I heard taxes were optional. No?
Well,
No.
I make the pasta with the mama. I pay no taxes. That's what.
All right. Let's turn our attention to Dr. Hanan, who joins us now. Hey, Dr. Hanan, how are you? It's called It's Going to Be Okay, and it's what we do on a Monday morning with Dr. Hanan Bushkin. And it's good to see you. How have you been?
Yeah, I've been busy. How have you been?
Very good. I mean, I think a lot of people are taking quite a bit of strain. I can't believe it's, you know, a month and a half until the end of the year. And we've all had goals and ambitions and ideas for 2021. If you haven't put those into play now, it's too late. There's no time left.
Yeah, people have resigned to the fact that it's the end of the year. They'll start again in January.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I got this email from Samantha. She said, I love your show, especially like Dr. Hanan on Mondays. It inspired me to book an appointment to see him, but I could only get one in 3 months' time. That's, of course, because you're so busy. I decided to see someone else in the meantime. And briefly, she says, my boyfriend has a brain tumor. The tumor isn't growing, but causes him to have seizures. We've been dating for a year, and I find it really difficult to find a balance in our relationship. When to cut him slack because he's not well, when to treat him like a boyfriend, friend, partner that he is. Knowing when to put up with the boundaries, or put up the boundaries rather, is a really difficult thing when the other person is not well. He wants to be treated normally, but sometimes it's difficult when there is so little I can do to help the situation with his health. The little I can do to make his life easier is what I want to do. However, recently I feel that my cup is beginning to feel a little empty at times. I guess this is the balancing act that can be applied to any relationship, whether you're dealing with someone who is sick or not. I'd like to know what Dr. Hanan thinks. So what do you think of that?
I always say that to make a relationship work, there are a couple of fundamentals. Communication, compromise, trust, intimacy, attraction, and common and shared values. And common and shared values mean we both want the same thing, because if person A wants a one-night stand, another person wants a long-term committed relationship, well, you're both going to head the wrong way. But we always start with two of them, which is communication and compromise. Because the communication and compromise, and by the way, compromise means, you know, when I see a couple and the guy or the girl or one of them says, it's my way or I'm out of here, that's when I put up my hands and I go, well, I cannot help you.
Sure.
Because to make any relationship work, you've got to massage yourself into each other. You've got to dance it out. And there's no such thing as, you know, people have this massive misconception about relationship, like a guy meets a girl, they connect happily ever after. It doesn't work this way. You almost got to kind of wedge yourself within each other and fulfill each other's needs. And the only way to do that is to figure out what the other person wants and needs. And the reason why compromise is so important is because I'm prepared to put stuff on the table that perhaps is difficult for me, and I expect you to do the same. And we communicate through it. So in a nutshell, that my answer to this individual is you always got to communicate in terms of what your expectations are and what the other person's expectations are in this relationship. The fact that there is a brain tumor and I think she said seizures, well, that is an element that he brings onto the table, a restriction, a limitation, sometimes a consequence of what he's going through. And it is what it is, and you've got to work your way through it. But the only way to do it is through communication. What do you need from your partner? What does he need from you? You know, in psychology, we call this need bidding. In a relationship, we get along because we fulfill each other's needs. So that's how relationships connect. Mm-hmm. You fulfill my need, I fulfill your need, and that's how we connect. But needs are communicated kind of discreetly and indirectly. So if I turn to my wife tonight and I go, who had such a hard day today? What I'm in essence, I'm really saying is, babes, can you acknowledge my contribution to the family? And there's going to be one or two things that are going to happen at this point. She will either fulfill that need or she'll reject that need. Mm. If she fulfills that need, our relationship becomes stronger. If she rejects that need, then I go and bid somewhere else. And our relationship becomes weaker. My job in a relationship is to be very clear in terms of what I'm bidding for, because a lot of couples speak in generalities. I want love. I want attention. I want affection. I want respect. Mm-hmm. I want intimacy. And all those are airy-fairy nonsense. It doesn't mean anything, because love to me is very different to love to you. Mm-hmm. Intimacy to me means something very differently to what it would mean to you. So my job in a relationship is to speak in specifics in terms of what I'm needing. And my other job in a relationship is to make sure that I don't leave the conversation when I'm not sure about what my wife, my partner specifically wants. So if my wife says to me, I need more love, my answer would be absolutely, but what does it mean?
Right.
What does it mean to you? Boil it down to specific, actionable things that I can and can't do. And a lot of people make the mistake of like, well, he should know. Well, she should know.
Oh, yeah.
Where from? Where from?
This is insane.
Where from? I don't have to tell it.
I mean, this drives me crazy, Dr. Hanan. I see it with so many people, and I'm on the outside of these relationships, and I see a couple, and this is how they talk to each other, and I just want to exit stage left and not have anything to do with them again. They're not communicating properly because they don't even know what the basic definitions are. I mean,
absolutely.
How are you meant to pull this out of the sky? And it's usually, I hate to say it, and Leanne might give me some steam about this, but it's usually that the woman just expects the man to just interpret what she means. He must pick it up like out of the ether and just know that that's what she's looking for. She wants affirmation. She wants a hug. She wants him to do more work around the house. She wants him to help her with something. He must just figure this out of nowhere. What the hell is that?
So you know what happens a lot.
Got your back.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks.
So you know what happens a lot, though, like when I encourage couples to actually talk specifics. So tell me, you say you want love. What does it mean to you? So tell me you want intimacy. What does it mean to you? So tell me you want respect. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? Boil it down to specifics. You won't believe it, but about 50% of the time, they actually don't know.
Yeah.
They actually don't know what they want.
Right.
Because they'll go, I just want to feel differently. But when we try to boil it down to specifics, they're not actually sure, and we've got to just dig it out. Another mistake that couples make is they'll ask, okay, so let's just say the typical story, you know, the wife asks the husband, get me flowers every Friday night. And the husband gets her flowers, and the response is, well, you're only doing it because I asked you.
Oh, God.
And he's like, well, I mean, I don't do it. I don't win. I do it. I don't win. So what I'm asking of all couples, but specifically Samantha in this relationship, in this email, is communicate specifically what you actually want, mm-hmm. and ask your partner to specifically communicate what he wants and negotiate that.
Be specific. Okay, Doc, I do want to move on to another thing because I know we've got limited time, but this is something that happened in the news last week that has got a lot of people very, very upset. Lawrence Masinga is this personal trainer, and he was busy coaching a session live online, and he was murdered during this live online training session, and people were watching in horror. And this is just one example of so many things that happen in South Africa. I mean, my brother was at the traffic lights the other day, and a guy pulled a gun on him and demanded his cell phone. You know, this happens to – we all have stories like this, war stories. Can you just give all of us – those who are traumatized by witnessing this, those who are involved in a situation like this, give us some advice on how you can decompress after a thing like that, how you can manage the stress, what you can do to kind of get your life back on track. Because for many people, it sends them in very justifiably into very dark places.
For sure. So I'll say on the macro, we've got to just accept that the brain doesn't like things that it can't predict. It doesn't like things that it can't foresee. So when we witness, I mean, the people that have witnessed this live or us reading this, the brain goes, I don't like it. Mm. And it goes into a way of trying to figure things out, and it can't. And trauma is what happens when the brain tries to make sense of something and it just can't. And what happens is the brain remains in what we call a limbo state, and it spins, and your body starts reacting, and the longer you are in a limbo state, the more anxious you become, and the more traumatic it becomes for you. So my advice to everybody is to focus on things that you can control. Don't focus on things that you cannot control. You know, Gareth, you and I discussed this on your TV show, mm-hmm. The law of focused intent. And for those of you who haven't heard that, I'm not a big believer of the law of attraction. I don't believe you attract things, but just by thinking about it, I believe that you action it. But the law of focused intent is as follows. If I ask you how many, if you come to my office and I ask you how many red cars did you see on the road?
Yeah.
You will go, well, I can't think of any. But if I ask you to become aware of it, before you got into your car, on the way, you'd probably see 40. Mm. You didn't attract 40. 40 were always there, but the fact that you were focused and intentional about it, it came up to awareness. Whatever you focus on or intentional about was going to come up into consciousness. That's the way it works. You know, I do this trick with all my patients. I say to them, when was the last time you've seen a pink car? And they say, I've never seen the pink car. And I said to them, I bet you you'll see a pink car today. Just be aware of it. Hmm. And everybody sends me a photo an hour later. Oh, my God, there's a pink car. There's a pink car. They think I'm a magician. I'm not a magician. I just know that when you look for it, you shall find it. And the answers that you get from life is dependent on the questions that you ask. If I wake up in the morning and I go, why does my life suck? Well, I'll pick up on all the red cars. And if I go, why am I the luckiest person in the world? Well, I'll see all the blue trucks. Your intention and focus is what your brain is going to seek for and is going to find. My point in the story is reality is not what's in front of us. Reality is what we tend to focus and are intentional about, because that's what we'll pick up. And yes, South Africa has got blue trucks and it's got red cars. And guess who else? What other country in the world has got blue trucks and red cars? Every country in the world.
Right.
Every country. And by the way, the fact that you are focused on the red cars doesn't mean that you go, blue trucks don't exist. My point is, just because you focus on things that you can't control, you're still acknowledging that there are problems. There are issues that I acknowledge are there, but there's nothing that I can do about it. Or rather, focusing on it is going to break me down. So my advice to everybody, focus on cleaning up your own bedroom. Focus on things in your world that you can control. Focus on things in your world that add value to you.
That's awesome. Good advice and something we can all learn from, because this stuff happens. And some of it, as you say, is beyond our control. It's not predictable. And if you focus on that all the time, it's going to become your reality and you're going to start driving yourself crazy. So
absolutely.
I love it. Good, solid, practical advice, as always, from Dr. Hanan Bushkin. Good to see you. And we will
nice to see you guys.
Yeah, we'll catch up with you in a week's time.
See you then.
Thanks, Doc. It is 7 o'clock. It is 7 o'clock, which means it's time for a quick break. We'll be back in a moment or two. Get on with this morning's information and empowerment and entertainment and craziness. I mean, there's always a healthy dollop of that, too. That's why we have to have Dr. Hanan on once a week, just to keep us on track. Leanne and Bulelo and I are here to take you through your morning, and we've got Collectomania, among other things, coming right up. So stick around on CliffCentral.com.
CliffCentral.com.